If you're like me, there's a certain kind of headline that keeps you up at night.
Ice covering the ground in Mexico during the summer.
Freak hailstorm.
After a freakish hailstorm.
The freakish weather.
Temperatures were in the 80s just before the city got buried in...
The story of the freak hailstorm in Guadalajara is the most recent story giving me the creeps, but really any story that's potentially linked to climate change launches me into a spiral of despair.
Gray whales are dying. This year, at least 25 have washed up.
Hungry polar bears and their cubs rummaging through a landfill.
Poland and the Czech Republic have already recorded their highest June temperatures ever.
It's actually impossible to link any single weather event solely to global warming. But what we do know is that climate change exacerbates natural disasters like hurricanes or wildfires. And that is scary, okay? It's really scary. But it turns out I'm not alone in being stressed out about climate change. A 2017 study out of Yale showed that Latinos in the U.S. are, quote, much more engaged with the issue of global warming than non-Latinos. 7 out of 10 Latinos believe global warming is caused by humans, and 50% believe they are currently being impacted by it. So if you're a fellow freaked out Latino, you are probably also desperate for information about what can be done or what is being done to curb carbon emission and even potentially reverse global warming. And that's how I came across the work of Héctor García Martín.
I am a staff scientist at Berkeley National Lab. I'm also the lead for quantitative metabolic modeling at the Joint Bioenergy Institute. I'm the deputy vice president for biofuels and bioproduct.
If somebody at a party asks you what you do, what do you say?
I'm a scientist working on synthetic biology.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Antonia Cerejido, in for María Hinojosa. And today, the potential world-changing scientific field of synthetic biology. Synthetic biology is a burgeoning field. And because it's a whole entire field, it's pretty hard to sum up in just one sentence. But here is my best try. In the same way that computer scientists write code to build what we see on the internet, synthetic biologists write using DNA to create new biological structures, essentially designing DNA to make living things act the way we want them to.
For example, we take something like yeast. And yeast, as you know, produces beer, produces the alcohol in beer. What we do is we change the DNA in the cell. So instead of producing alcohol in the beer, it produces jet fuels, for example.
And it's an exciting field for people who suffer from climate change anxiety because one of the major implications is that it could create new biofuels that would free us from our dependence on fossil fuels and other fuels that release carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which is the main cause of global warming. But despite its amazing potential to basically save the world, there are also some pretty scary implications of what this science could mean. And so I talked to Héctor, who not only studies the science, but is working specifically on trying to predict what changing DNA could mean to ecosystems, about what the science is and what it could mean for our future. Let's jump right in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's the range of applications that synthetic biology could have?
There is now a lot of products done through synthetic biology. There is synthetic leather, renewable biofuels to combat climate change. There are vegetarian burgers.
The Impossible Burger is an example.
It's called the veggie burger that bleeds.
Yes, so the Impossible Burger doesn't have any meat whatsoever. And what they did is they took the heme from a plant, from a yeast, as far as I remember, and they use that heme to produce the same flavors of blood.
Whoa.
And that flavor of blood is enough to make it taste like meat.
It doesn't taste like plants.
So it tastes like the real thing?
It does. I'm spooked.
I didn't realize it was blood flavored. That's so crazy.
In a sense, yes. Heme is what is in blood that actually attaches to the oxygen and makes it taste the way it tastes.
Okay, so I learned about you in an article about termites.
Yeah, people are really fascinated by the termites.
What can scientists learn from termites?
Yes, so the termites are very efficient at eating wood, right? They are able to take a whole house and blow it into CO2 in no time. You know, and the reason they can do that is because they have, in their guts, they have microbial communities that are very efficient at eating that wood. So we were figuring out what are the enzymes in that microbial community that would eat that wood. And we were using those enzymes instead of producing CO2 to produce carbon sources that then we can convert into biofuels.
So what you're saying is that termites can convert plant matter into energy. And you want to figure out how to replicate termite digestion so that us humans can also do the same thing and create biofuels.
Well, in principle, you could do almost anything, right? So if you are able to take a cell's DNA and program it to do what you want it to do, you could program plants to produce the products you want it to create. You could change your microbiome so you could improve your athletic efficiency, for example. You can create biofuels that are renewable and produce no CO2. They are carbon neutral and they don't put CO2 in the atmosphere. But what is interesting about this is the possibilities. You know, if you can actually engineer a living being to a specification, there's really very few limits. And in a sense, you know, synthetic biology is kind of in fashion now. There is a lot of people in the tech field who are looking to invest in synthetic biology because they see it as a revolutionary technology that can have the same kind of exponential growth that we have for IT for several decades.
There was a video that sort of explains it that showed, like, one way of thinking about it is now we build buildings.
Mm-hmm.
With synthetic biology, we could, like, grow buildings.
Imagine modifying the DNA code of plants to grow living buildings. We can revolutionize construction, architecture, and gardening, creating entire cities out of living organic material.
So that's still very far away, but it's not impossible. It's not going to happen in the next 5 years, but it's not impossible. So there is still a lot we need to learn to do that.
Could synthetic biology stop climate change?
Well, this is what we've been working on for 12 years already. Taking the CO2 from the atmosphere, we use it to grow plants that are genetically modified, and then we deconstruct those plants with something called ionic liquids and enzymes that make them into sugars. And then we feed those sugars into cells that make them into biofuels. And once you burn those biofuels, the CO2 that comes out of that is the same CO2 that the plant used in the first moment to actually grow up.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you took carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to create plants, which become biofuels, so when they burn, they don't put more CO2 into the atmosphere, they're just putting back what they took out. So basically, creating something that's carbon neutral.
Yes, exactly. It's almost neutral, yeah, because there is a few other externalities there, but the amount of CO2 that comes out is the same that came in, so it's almost carbon neutral.
And that exists, I keep coming back to this, but I'm like, that exists today, the ability to create biofuels that are carbon neutral.
Yes, and we've been producing them for 12 years.
It's crazy to me that, like, George Clooney isn't taking biofuel flights, you know?
Yes, it's not, you know, if George Clooney was doing that, he'll have to pay, I don't know, like 100 times more for his ticket.
What is he doing all those Nescafe commercials for?
Yeah. I don't know, Antonio, if you want me, I can give him a call later and ask him. The problem is that they're too expensive, right? When we first started making a gallon of biofuel was around, you know, $350,000, which was definitely not competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after 10 years of work, we were able to make enough $35 a gallon, which is, you know, much, much better than $350,000, but it's still not competitive because you expect to pay around $4 or so for your gallon of fuel, right?
Mm.
Now, we've been funded for another 5 years to bring that $35 per gallon to around $4 per gallon or even $2.5 per gallon.
In terms of the science of how this works, it's only possible because of CRISPR, which is a new kind of engineering that gives scientists the power to basically edit DNA, like fixing genetic defects or modifying plants to create biofuel.
And that really has revolutionized the way that we do synthetic biology. So for the first time, we can really write that DNA in a very effective way. It's like we have a word processor for DNA.
And every day it's getting easier, right?
Yes, there is a significant amount of researchers and an amount of investment. But the main problem that we have is that now we can modify DNA quite effectively. We know how to modify it and we know how to synthesize it, but we cannot predict what the change is going to do. And that's where people like me and my group come in, where we're trying to use things like machine learning and artificial intelligence to try to predict how those changes in DNA are going to change the behavior of the cell.
So what are some of the negative consequences of synthetic biology?
Well, once you start changing organisms and biology and biological beings, there is a danger that those changes will have an impact in the ecosystem that they are in, right? We may have heard of gene drives, for example. Gene drives for mosquitoes are ways of changing mosquitoes so you can make a whole species of mosquitoes disappear. And they've been doing this with dengue mosquitoes. In principle, this is great because you don't have dengue anymore in some places in Brazil, but those mosquitoes may have an impact in the ecosystem that is really hard to foresee, right? So those are things that could happen, and I think it's something that society at large should be aware of.
Another potential implication of synthetic bio is bioterrorism. Can you explain what that is?
Well, imagine that you could actually modify the crops of another country so they don't have optimal yields or they die early or they transmit a disease, you know. Those things could, in principle, be possible, right? So there's a lot of people thinking about that right now. You know, this is something that is we're starting to explore. And, you know, right now, one of the main problems that we have is that if there was someone else, some enemy trying to actually use synthetic biology to change something in our ecosystem, we wouldn't be able to detect it. And detecting that is the first move in trying to figure out, you know, how to tackle bioterrorism.
A couple weeks ago, the New York Times came out with an article about how the single most carbon-using activity a human can do is take a flight. They cited that one flight from New York to Los Angeles was 32 square feet of ice melting in one flight.
Yeah.
That was the first time that it really hit me. Like, you know, flying is bad for the environment, but when you think of 32 square feet, that's per flight. That's crazy. There's so many flights in one day.
And it's increasing because now everyone flies. Everyone flies all the time. And we're having more low-cost flights, and it's happening more and more. And a lot of the developing countries are getting into this trend and having more and more flights. So it's only going to get worse, right?
I mean, this is what leads into my sense of anxiety. It's like, I just imagine things like multiplying, you know, and to like how many different flights are happening right now, the trajectory in which things are going. You who have to, who think a lot about renewable energy, do you have anxiety?
Well, this is, you know, this is not a new fight, right? I've been here doing this for 12 years. So I remember this all started with the Bush administration, and then the Obama administration really pushed it up. And we started to see some political measures that were actually making a difference, you know, the renewable fuel standards and a few other things, you know, a carbon tax in some places that was actually going to make a difference. And then the new government, the Trump administration, came up and they didn't have a lot of interest in climate change. Now, thankfully, the Senate and the House did have an interest in climate change, and we're still working on it. But it's, you know, I think the last 3 years have had the top temperatures in history. I think at some point this will become obvious in the same way that, you know, it took a long time, you know, for people to realize that smoking is bad, even though it was obvious. But eventually it'll happen. It's just that I don't know how much more time we have. It's a bit disheartening, but you have to take it as it is and then work every day to produce better technology that will lower the price, that will make it easier for government to actually acknowledge the problem and do something about using renewable biofuels in a systematic and scalable way.
Okay, so where do you see the future of synthetic biology?
You know, there's the potential for bioterrorism, but there's the potential to eliminate all of the plastics from the ocean, and there's the potential to stop climate change, right? And the thing is, you know, it's our choice, right? Is if we don't care, if we choose politicians that don't care, you know, it's going to be bad. If we do care, if we put our hands into it, we make decisions, we have the right people making the right decisions, and we choose them wisely, then it's going to be good.
Yeah, and I think one of the main things that I've taken away from our conversation is that it's like an existential problem, the climate change problem. It feels like there's nothing that can really be done about it in a way. But the research that your team is doing at the lab feels like there is a sort of other opening that isn't talked about enough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, individuals can make a difference, but it's not comparable to what the governments of the world united can actually do. And the good news is that the U.S. government has been doing this for 12 years. I mean, and there are whole programs, you know, and whole parts of the Department of Energy and the Office of Science whose job is to actually do this, right? So the gears of the government are already in motion. Now, how can, as a consumer, help that happen? And is the consumer and the individual role, along with the government role, and a planetary level that can make the difference? So learn about it and learn how to engage with it. It's doable. It's not just on you only. There's governments whose job is to do these things, and they're doing it.
I Hector Garcia Martin, thank you so much for being on Latino USA.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hector Garcia Martin is a scientist at the Joint Bioenergy Institute, where he works on bioengineering cells to produce biofuels and other renewable products. This episode was produced by Maggie Freeling and edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Paliza Carr, Janice Yamoka, and Sarah Quevedo, with help this week from Jeannie Montalvo. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our interns are Lucas Southard and Jonathan Cabral. Our theme music was composed by Senia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our executive producer is Maria Hinojosa. I'm your host this week, Antonia Cerejido. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, you can find us on social media. Adios!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the Wincote Foundation.
So you're not vegetarian?
I'm afraid I'm not vegetarian.
Even with all the research?
I have no kids.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!
I'm Antonia Cerejido, in for Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a story about legacy and identity in northern New Mexico.
You know, it gets me so mad because it's so stupid. You know, it's like the Arabs and the Jews fighting. Yes, it's stupid. These are family feuds that the government should not have gotten involved in.
That's next time on Latino USA.